Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Episode 367 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. It is a day on which we could have one of the biggest, most significant trades in Washington, D.C. sports history. The MLB trade deadline is on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. We certainly expect the Nationals to sell and sell hard, but will the Nats sell Juan Soto? That is the question. The Nats haven't traded Soto yet, at least as I am recording this at, let's see, what time is it? 2:05 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday. Who knows? Maybe by the end of this opening segment of the show, Juan Soto will have been traded. Hello and welcome to this Tuesday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. Now, the Nats on Monday did make a trade. A-Ray Adrianza, we hardly knew ye. Josh Bell certainly will be traded on Tuesday. A bunch more Nats probably will as well. But what's going to happen with Juan Soto? Well, if he is going to be traded on Tuesday, he went out as a Nat in style on Monday night. A very impressive all-around game, including a mammoth home run off ex-Nat Max Scherzer, though in a Nats loss, a 7-3 loss to the National League East leading New York Mets at Nationals Park. We'll go in-depth on the Nats coming up in a bit. Lots of Commanders talk on this Tuesday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. Guess who is back to not practicing? Yeah, you got it. Curtis Samuel. Hey, you didn't think that he'd actually be practicing for long, did you? Ron Rivera on Monday morning revealed some things about what's going on with Curtis Samuel that were, shall we say, discouraging. I'm going to try not to overreact to all of this, but I'll talk about this next segment, as well as the Commander situation at right guard. Trey Turner has been out with a quad injury. Is Wes Schweitzer going to end up being the team's starting right guard this season? I will talk Antonio Gibson. He on Monday morning practiced fully for the first time at 2022 Commanders training camp off having dealt with a hamstring injury. Gibson on Monday morning had some interesting things to say about where he's at in his career. Where are we with Antonio Gibson? It's tricky with him. You could argue that he's underrated. You could also argue that he is overrated. I'll attempt to make sense of things coming up. And I'll talk Commanders defense, which on Monday morning outplayed the Commanders offense by quite a bit, a lot of interceptions. Rod Rivera addressed how he feels the Commanders quarterbacks are doing so far in training camp, and discussed various defensive backs, including the player who is having perhaps the best training camp of any Commanders player, Kendall Fuller. You'll hear all of this and more. Also on the show, the Orioles. They on Monday made a major trade. It traded Trey Mancini. Boom Boom Mancini. Boom Boom has gone bye-bye. And if you're an O's fan, this is a good thing. And I don't in any way mean that as a shot at Mancini. I'll explain later in the show, as well as discuss another Orioles win, a 7-2 win at the Texas Rangers in a game in which Adley Rutschman, Cedric Mullins, and Ryan Mountcastle all did well. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Lots of emails on the Juan Soto situation and the mega trade that could be coming for the Nats. Email from Mike P. My thoughts on the Soto dilemma. I personally don't think that a team paying a player $400+ million when that team, with or without the player, is going nowhere really is a smart move. If the Nats are truly in a rebuild, then they need to fully commit to being in a rebuild. I would trade Soto now. I would trade him to a team with a farm system that is really good, from which I could get a starting pitcher to come along with other top prospects, accept the rebuild, be bad for the next few seasons, progress these young players, and save the money that you would have paid to Soto and get talent elsewhere. All I know is I'm happy to have witnessed a World Series because the direction that I'm seeing this team go in, who knows when the next World Series will be. Thank you. For the email, Mike. Email from another Mike, Michael King. I was thinking about Soto. I am sad about the current state of the Nationals. Also sad that Soto is likely unsignable by anybody at this point. Scott Boras seems determined to take Soto to free agency. Boras also says that he works for his clients and not the other way around. Yeah, whatever. But there is my problem with Juan Soto. If he and Boras want to play this game, then so be it. If the goal is eventual free agency, then so be it. Soto was upset that the Nationals apparently revealed the details of the declined offer and then at the All-Star game said that he was uncomfortable with all of the trade talk. Well, what's it going to be, Juan? This is how the big boy game is played. So while I am very concerned with the state of the Nationals, I am also a little irritated with Soto. If he is unsignable, the Nats must trade him now and maximize the return. Thank you for the email, Mike. A lot of good points being made here. To me, there are two major unknowns in the Juan Soto situation. A, is he really, truly unsignable? Or does he just want a ton of money? Like, is there really, truly no number that would get him to say yes to a contract extension? I have a hard time believing that. I do believe that that number exists. B, the Nats ownership situation. Are the Lerners, in fact, selling the entirety of their ownership? Or is it possible that the Lerners are only taking on new minority investors? When will the sale be completed? And will the new ownership be bold and aggressive to where it makes Juan Soto an offer that he can't refuse? We don't know enough about these two topics, the true unsignability of Juan Soto and the Nats ownership situation. And these are two very important topics when trying to figure out whether the Nats should trade Juan Soto right now. Given what we do know, my approach would be to complete the sale of the team, presumably by this offseason, let new ownership take a crack at trying to sign Soto to a contract extension, and then reevaluate where the Soto situation is at. The Nats could always trade Soto this coming offseason, and I'm not convinced that the haul that the Nats would get back for Soto this offseason would be that much less than the haul that the Nats would get back for Soto right now. I am normally not a major champion of signing baseball players to mega money contracts because so few of these mega money contracts work out. But if you're going to make an exception to the rule of not signing players to mega money contracts, Soto is a player for whom you make the exception. He is young. He is durable. He is elite. He is a good teammate. He is marketable. I mean, all of those things matter a lot. And don't discount that final item, marketable. There is an economic value to having Juan Soto that on its own could be worth millions of dollars per year to the Nats. Email from Dr. CCB on Carson Wentz off something that a recent guest, Ian Wharton of Pro Football Network, said on the podcast. Had Ian on episode 360, writes the good doctor. I wanted to make sure that I heard the interviewee correctly. Pro Football Network's Ian Wharton mentioned that Carson Wentz struggles with reading defenses. I think that took me by surprise because I had never heard that criticism of Wentz. After having been in the league since 2016 and the successful years that he had with the Eagles, I would think that that would not have been a glaring obstacle. Do you have any insight on that statement that Ian made? Thank you for the email, Dr. CCB. So Carson Wentz's 2020 season is one of the worst seasons that any starting quarterback has had in recent NFL history. Carson had a lot of problems that season, including reading defenses. Carson's 2020 season was a mess. If I had to itemize the biggest on-the-field concerns with Carson, though, I don't think that reading defenses would be up there. The biggest on-the-field concerns with Carson, in no particular order, are his inaccuracy, his taking of sacks, and his tendency to throw these, like, mind-numbingly bad interceptions. Now, he doesn't necessarily throw a lot of interceptions, but he seems to have thrown more than his share of really bad interceptions. Now, could not being great at reading defenses be part of some or all of the things that I just went through? Sure. But I don't know that Carson's biggest problem has been not understanding what he's seeing. I think that his biggest problem has been his decision-making. One of the more interesting occurrences during the offseason to me was Ron Rivera emphasizing Carson Wentz needing to make good decisions. I don't think that Ron was just saying that. I think that that's a big emphasis for Ron with Carson. Make good decisions. Well, the law firm of Paulson and Nace can help your family make difficult decisions. Heck, maybe Paulson and Nace can help Carson Wentz make good decisions on the field. But if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Call 202-902-7611, and when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace treats its clients with respect and dignity and wants what is best for the firm's clients. Paulson and Nace will treat you, your family, and your situation with the care and expertise that you deserve. And Paulson and Nace is excellent at what it does. Paulson and Nace has recovered millions of dollars for the sick and injured. McDonald versus City Hospital, a $1.75 million verdict in a medical malpractice case. Bell versus Inova Health Systems, a $3 million verdict for paralysis due to failure to diagnose a medical condition. Clifton versus Georgetown University Hospital, a $50 million verdict for a young mother injured during childbirth. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. And don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, when tragedy happens, let the family of Paulson and Nace take care of your family. So if you are familiar with the movie Jerry Maguire, you perhaps remember the scene in which Jerry Maguire, a.k.a. Tom Cruise, a.k.a. Tom, is leaving his job and says that he isn't gonna flip out, but then actually, essentially, flips out. Here you go.
I'm not gonna do what you all think I'm gonna do, which is just flip out!
Yeah, the flip out scene from the movie Jerry Maguire. That's how I feel right now as a Commanders fan with receiver Curtis Samuel. And actually, this is pretty appropriate because, as you may recall, Tom Cruise and our Commanders co-owner and co-CEO, Dan Snyder, have had an association. August 2006, Dan Snyder and other investors signed a deal to provide financing to a production company that was run by Tom Cruise. And there was a famous scene of Dan, Tom, and Tom's then-wife, Katie Holmes, at a Redskins-Minnesota Vikings game at FedEx Field in week one of the 2006 season. But I digress. With Curtis Samuel. So yeah, I recognize that training camp is just getting going. Monday was just day six of 2022 Commanders training camp. I recognize that you shouldn't overreact to things in training camp period, especially things early in training camp. But given what happened with Curtis Samuel last season, how do you not at least wonder about, if not get annoyed by, what is going on with Curtis right now? So Washington in March 2021 signed Curtis Samuel as an unrestricted free agent. He got a three-year, $34.5 million contract with $21.5 million guaranteed at signing. But Curtis, in the 2021 regular season, played in just five of Washington's 17 games due to the most nagging groin injury in the history of nagging groin injuries. Now, he had been practicing at Commanders training camp. He had actually been looking pretty good at Commanders training camp. But Curtis Samuel on Monday morning was working on a side field of having been rather limited in each of the Commanders' previous two full training camp practices, those on last Friday morning and last Saturday morning. And I say full training camp practices because the Commanders are conducting afternoon walkthroughs. The schedule has been morning practice, afternoon walkthrough. And yes, I did say that Curtis Samuel on Monday morning was working on a side field, his home away from home. The phrase Curtis Samuel is working on a side field was typed and said about a million times last year. One of the side fields at the team facility at Ashburn, Virginia should be renamed Curtis Samuel Side Field, like RFK Stadium, Curtis Samuel Side Field. Anyway, check this out from Commanders head coach Ron Rivera during his post-practice press conference on Monday morning on what's going on with Curtis Samuel. And you'll hear Ron reference the Commanders head athletic trainer, Al Bellamy.
Well, the real good thing with it is, more so than anything else, is this is all about the plan. You know, we came out the first couple of days, got a chance to really look at him. I know he and Al talked a little bit, and there was some concern as far as just his overall football conditioning and shape. You know, you can train all you want, you can condition all you want, but coming back and doing some of the things that we want him to do, we got to be smart with it. Al and his guys have a plan, and so with Curtis, we're going to stick to the plan.
All right, so Ron Rivera right there revealing that Curtis Samuel's, quote, overall football conditioning and shape, end quote, are issues right now. Well, golly gee, isn't that great? Now, Ron emphasized that there is a plan and that the Commanders are sticking to the plan. But per Ron, Curtis's, quote, overall football conditioning and shape, end quote, are issues right now. Was this expected with Curtis, that he would have to be handled carefully due to conditioning issues of not having played much last season? More from Ron on Monday morning.
I think more so than anything else, it was about seeing where he was when we got him back those first couple of days and just listening to him. And in all honesty, him talking about, you know, his hamstrings and lower back being sore and tight. One of the things that we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that we brought him back the right way. So they've put a plan together. They've sat down. They went over it with Curtis yesterday, and they're implementing it now. And what will happen is you'll see there'll be ramp-ups, and then they'll slow it back down. There'll be ramp-ups. There'll be times when he's interacting, getting, you know, some of the 11-on-11 work, stuff like that. But it's all part of the plan, you know, with the ultimate goal is really the regular season more than it is anything else. This has nothing to do with last year's groin injury or anything like that. This is just about the plan for him specifically.
Okay, so Curtis Samuel's hamstrings and lower back have been sore. Gee, the Curtis Samuel news just keeps getting better and better. The hits just keep on coming. Like Jerry Maguire said, I'm not going to flip out, but let me flip out.
I'm not going to do what you all think I'm going to do, which is just flip out!
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Look, I'm being facetious, sort of. You know, Monday was August 1st. Yes, the Commanders' regular season opener against the Jacksonville Jaguars at FedEx Field isn't until September 11th. We need to pace ourselves, no doubt. But, of course, given what happened with Curtis Samuel last season, it is impossible to see him not consistently practicing and now learn that his conditioning is an issue and that he's dealing with sore hamstrings and a sore lower back. And not wonder. I mean, you're not overreacting if you're asking some questions right now about what exactly is going on with Curtis Samuel. It was good to hear Ron Rivera say that what's going on with Curtis Samuel has nothing to do with last year's groin injury. But at the same time, this is the same team that hid that Curtis in June 2021 underwent core muscle surgery. So you don't know what to believe. Again, though, Monday was only day six of 2022 Commanders training camp. So I suppose that we should all remain calm. The Commanders on day five of training camp Sunday did not practice. The Commanders on day 7 of training camp Tuesday most certainly will practice, because it is on Tuesday that the Commanders are set to conduct their first padded practice of 2022 Commanders training camp. Things on Tuesday are set to get especially physical. This was Ron Rivera during his post-practice press conference on Monday morning on if there is a position group that he's especially looking forward to watching during Tuesday's padded practice.
Well, we got a group of young safeties, a solid group of young linebackers that we have to really look into and try to have a very good feel within a week. And just, I think this will be a very important week for us as far as those group of guys are concerned. I mean, you know, we're veteran in the fronts, offensive and defensive lines to a degree. We got a group of young tight ends that we have to see as well. You know, because again, you know, we're trying to make sure we bring John Bates back at the right time as well.
Yeah, tight end John Bates has not been practicing lately due to injury. Another notable Commanders offensive player who has not been practicing due to injury is guard Trey Turner. He's dealing with a quad injury. Ron Rivera on Monday morning on where we're at with Trey Turner.
Trey's just, you know, again, he a little bit of a quad, and so what we're trying to do is, you know, bring him back, work him through it. He's a veteran guy, you know, and it's one of those things you can't, you know, you got to be very, very diligent on that with veteran guys.
Yes, you do. The 2022 season will be Trey Turner's age 29 season. The Commanders this past May 2nd announced the signing of Turner as an unrestricted free agent. The timing of the signing was notable, as it was on May 2nd at 4 p.m. Eastern that every unrestricted free agent signing by an NFL team no longer counted against the team's compensatory draft pick formula. So there was a strategy in terms of when the Commanders signed Trey Turner. Trey Turner is a certified member of the Carolina Mafia. He is a certified Commander. The Carolina Panthers took Trey Turner in the third round of the 2014 NFL draft out of LSU. He played for the Panthers for 6 seasons, 2014 through 2019. So Trey Turner played for Ron Rivera during his time as Panthers head coach. Ron was Panthers head coach from January 2011 to December 2019, and Trey Turner played for Commanders offensive line coach John Matsko during his time as Panthers offensive line coach. Matsko was the Panthers offensive line coach from 2011 through 2015 and was their running game coordinator from 2016 through 2019, working with Ron Rivera for the entirety of his tenure as Panthers head coach. Trey Turner, during his time with the Panthers, made the Pro Bowl in each of 5 consecutive seasons, 2015 through 2019. However, Turner's career has fallen off over the last 2 seasons. So the Panthers, in March 2020, traded Turner to the Los Angeles Chargers for left tackle Russell Okun, but Turner in the 2020 regular season for the Chargers played in just 9 games due to a groin injury. His overall grade for Pro Football Focus for the 2020 regular season was a horrendous 34.8. PFF grades are on a scale of 0 to 100. The Chargers in March 2021 released Turner. Turner in June 2021 signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers as an unrestricted free agent. He in the 2021 regular season for the Steelers started all 17 of their games, but he in the 2021 regular season for Pro Football Focus had an overall grade of 69.4 and allowed 7 sacks. And Turner in the 2021 regular season committed 6 penalties, and he was a part of a Steelers offensive line that was not good. The Steelers for the 2021 regular season finished number 31 out of 32 NFL teams in team pass block win rate per ESPN at 49% and finished number 30 out of 32 NFL teams in team run block win rate per ESPN at 67%. So there hasn't been a lot to like with Trey Turner over the last 2 seasons. And so when you take that into consideration and then you add the fact that Turner's missing time right now due to this quad injury, I do wonder if we're going to see Wes Schweitzer emerge as the Commander starting right guard and not Trey Turner. That is a notable position battle to be watching here. Trey Turner versus Wes Schweitzer at right guard. Another Commander, Andrew Norwell, is set to be the Commander starting left guard. Right guard, though, may well be in play. Of course, Washington's starting right guard for each of the last 7 seasons, 2015 through 2021, was Brandon Scherff, but he now is gone. Scherff in March signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars as an unrestricted free agent. Ron Rivera on Monday morning on how the Commanders' offensive line will do without Brandon Scherff.
Well, I think it's really about the sum of the five pieces, more so than it is anything else. And that's what it was for us last year. Don't get me wrong, Brandon's a great player. And it is hard to replace that caliber player. But again, you know, it is a collective, and it is about the five guys.
Yeah, and something that Washington has done really well with in terms of the offensive line over Ron Rivera's two seasons as the team's head coach and John Matsko's two seasons as the team's offensive line coach is have the whole of the offensive line be greater than the sum of the parts. Washington, over the last two seasons, has dealt with a lot in the way of injury on the offensive line, and yet still, the team's offensive lines have ranked very well. Washington finished the 2021 regular season number 9 in the NFL in team pass block win rate per ESPN at 63%, number 1 in the NFL in team run block win rate per ESPN at 75%, and number 6 in overall offensive line play per Pro Football Focus. And keep this in mind with Brandon Scherff. He missed a lot of games, okay? Washington already has been having to replace Scherff for years. Brandon Scherff from the 2018 season through the 2021 season missed a total of 22 regular season games. So he, over his final four seasons with Washington, played in just 43 of a possible 65 regular season games. So when people talk about, well, what now for Washington? No more Brandon Scherff. I'm like, have you been paying attention? We've been without Brandon Scherff a good bit for years now. Now, unlike Brandon Scherff, running back Antonio Gibson has not missed many games for Washington, but Gibson has been banged up quite a bit, including nursing a hamstring injury at the beginning of 2022 Commanders training camp. We on Monday morning, though, had Gibson fully practicing for the first time during 2022 Commanders training camp, and we heard from Gibson at a post-practice press conference during which he addressed a variety of topics regarding his career. I'll get to all of that after this.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, more now from 2022 Commanders training camp on Monday. We had some good injury news. Running back Antonio Gibson on Monday morning participated in team drills for the first time at 2022 Commanders training camp. Gibson is coming off a hamstring injury with which he dealt during the offseason program. He, at training camp, had practiced on a limited basis, but he on Monday morning was a true full participant in practice. Gibson on Monday morning did a post-practice press conference. Here he was on whether he was good with the cautious approach that head coach Ron Rivera took with Gibson in not having him fully practice at training camp until day 6.
Definitely, that's not something you want to re-injure and then you back to square one. So follow coach's plan, the trainer's plan, and it's working out.
And hopefully the plan continues to work out. There is concern with Antonio Gibson's health. There has to be. He is banged up a lot. I really believe that that is a big reason for why the Commanders took a running back in Brian Robinson Jr. in the third round of the 2022 NFL Draft. Although, in fairness to Gibson, he doesn't miss games, at least not many. Gibson, in his 2020 rookie regular season, played in 14 of Washington's 16 games. He, in December 2020, missed two games due to a turf toe injury. Gibson, in the 2021 regular season, played in 16 of Washington's 17 games, and the only game that he missed was due to COVID. He was on the reserve COVID-19 list from December 31st to January 5th. But Gibson, during the 2021 regular season, dealt with a shin injury, a rib injury, and a toe injury, and his efficiency numbers weren't particularly good. So just because he was playing in all of these games doesn't mean that he was at his best in all of these games. And that's the thing. Antonio Gibson had a mixed 2021 season, and that, I believe, is another reason that the Commanders drafted Brian Robinson Jr. There certainly were positives for Gibson last season. Gibson finished the 2021 regular season number 6 in the NFL in rushing yards at 1,037. He became the first Washington player to have at least 1,000 rushing yards in a regular season since running back Adrian Peterson in 2018. Gibson finished the 2021 regular season number 4 in the NFL in rushing attempts at 258. He, during Washington's 4-game winning streak, weeks 10 through 13, totaled 95 carries. That works out to 23.75 carries per game. Washington, during its best stretch of the season, leaned on Gibson quite a bit. And how about this? Gibson, through his first two NFL regular seasons, 2020 and 2021, 21 rushing slash receiving touchdowns, the most rushing slash receiving touchdowns for a Washington player over his first two NFL regular seasons ever. Not bad for a converted receiver who really hasn't been that much of a pass catcher for Washington so far. But there were undeniable negatives with Antonio Gibson last season. Of course, the fumbling. Gibson finished the 2021 regular season at number 1 among all running backs in the NFL in fumbles at 6. Gibson's advanced stats were not that great. He finished the 2021 regular season just at number 23 out of 50 qualified running backs in the NFL in Football Outsiders' success rate at 52%. And Gibson finished the 2021 regular season just number 38 out of 50 qualified running backs in the NFL in rushing DVOA for Football Outsiders at minus 6.8%. Antonio Gibson on Monday morning on what he's hoping to show this coming season.
Just the confidence. It's year 3. Feel like I got the reps that I needed these past 2 years. I made the mistakes that I'd have made and I learned from it. I just feel confident going in. I'm relaxed out there. I know what I'm doing. So it feels good. Feels real good.
So Antonio Gibson mentioned mistakes from which he has learned. What mistakes specifically was he talking about?
Just the miss holes. Sometimes, when I could have just, kept running straight, I kind of bounce out, and that's my big play mindset. But I've learned in the league, sometimes it's just good to hit it and run. And I feel like I've been correcting that. I've been practicing it here at OTAs and in the offseason. So that's something I'm really looking forward to instead of, going east and west, getting north and south. And I feel like that'll help my game out a lot. And, those break tackles and them big plays.
All right, so you heard Antonio Gibson reference missed holes. Gibson's vision has become a topic of debate. There are people who believe that Gibson has good vision. In fact, I, in recent weeks, have had multiple guests on the podcast who have advocated for Antonio Gibson's vision. Ian Wharton of Pro Football Network on episode 360, and my pal, Kevin Sheehan, host of the Kevin Sheehan Show podcast on episode 361. But the metrics do tell a different story. Antonio Gibson finished the 2021 regular season number 22 out of 52 qualified running backs in the NFL in rushing yards over expected per attempt at 0.6. Rushing yards over expected is a metric from the NFL's Next Gen Stats. Also, Gibson finished the 2021 regular season just number 37 out of 52 qualified running backs in the NFL in rushing efficiency for the NFL's Next Gen Stats. Rushing efficiency is calculated by taking the total distance that a player traveled on rushing plays as a ball carrier, according to Next Gen Stats, per rushing yards gained. And the idea is the lower the number, the more of a north-south runner that the player is. Gibson, again, finished 37th out of 52 qualified running backs in rushing efficiency for the 2021 regular season. So the Commanders certainly seem to think that Gibson hasn't been rushing for all of the yards that have been blocked for him. And Gibson himself seems to concur, at least to some extent. Antonio Gibson has toned up. His body fat percentage has dropped by a good bit. Gibson on Monday morning on what he hopes that this change in his body composition will mean for him this coming season.
Just wanted to eliminate the injuries. I've been battling with that for 2 years. Nothing major, but enough to where it hold me back a little bit. This year my goal is to get through the season injury free. And that'd be my biggest goal right there, just to play a healthy season. I feel like that helped out a lot. But the explosiveness, of course, if you're lighter, you're more toned, fit, you get in and out of cuts quicker, you can go the distance.
Yeah, a lot of nagging injuries for Antonio Gibson so far in his NFL career. Here's something else to be thinking about with Gibson. Are we this coming season finally going to see him be more of a factor on third downs? Now, he, in the 2021 regular season, did play more on third downs as compared to in his 2020 rookie regular season. Antonio Gibson in the 2020 regular season, incredibly, had just 11 third down touches. That was it. And they were productive touches. He had 8 third down carries for 55 yards and 2 touchdowns. That works out to 6.88 yards per carry. And he had 3 third down receptions for 47 yards on 3 targets. Now, Gibson in the 2021 regular season had 31 third down touches, 3 receptions, and 28 carries. Gibson, not having done more on third downs for Washington, certainly has been due in no small part to the team having a good third down running back and J.D. McKissic. But part of the why also has been Gibson being perceived as a liability in pass protection. Gibson on Monday morning on how he has grown in pass protection.
Pass pro, a lot. From my first game, kind of like not even knowing a protection for real. And then to actually get in the game and like seeing everybody run around, and then I had to learn about disguising. I'm confident, I could pick it up real quick now. I know when somebody's stacked might be coming and things of that nature. And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the process, but I feel like I'm there for sure.
And good to hear that. Big season coming up for Antonio Gibson. All right. Well, Monday morning's Commanders training camp practice was yet another practice during which the Commanders defense had its way with the Commanders offense. A lot of interceptions on Monday morning, including, yes, more than a few picks from quarterback Carson Wentz. The Commanders defense dominated last Thursday morning's practice, and the defense again looked very good during Monday morning's practice. What does this mean? Who knows? I mean, it's not like the Commanders offense is doing nothing during these training camp practices, but in 2 of the last 4 full Commanders training camp practices now, the defense has bested the offense. Commanders head coach Ron Rivera, during his post-practice press conference on Monday morning, on whether he's comfortable with the Commanders' quarterback play so far in training camp.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, part of it is you got to understand what we got going on out there. Only one guy really has a lot of experience in what we do and how we do it. With Carson, with Sam, with Cole, it's about learning and understanding the concepts, learning and understanding the progression of your reads, and then decision-making. So as we go through this, you feel good as long as you start seeing decisions being made the way they need to. And then when you listen in on the conversations they're having in the meetings and you hear them, hey, why'd you do this? I went from here to here to here, and that's why. And you feel good about those explanations. Or every now and then you may go, you get off that once you read this and go right to here. Those are things that they're all learning right now.
Yeah, the Commanders have 4 quarterbacks at training camp: Carson Wentz, Taylor Heinicke, Sam Howell, and Cole Kelly. Don't forget about Cole Kelly. The Commanders in May signed him as an undrafted free agent. Cole Kelly played for Arkansas for 2 seasons, 2017 and 2018, and then transferred to Southeastern Louisiana University. He is a quarterback monster. Cole Kelly at the 2022 NFL Scouting Combine measured as being 6'7 and 3/8 of an inch and 249 pounds. But what about this Commanders pass defense? It was very bad last season. Hopefully will be much better this coming season. Certainly should be much better this coming season. I talked a good bit about that on this past Friday show episode 365. Ron Rivera on Monday morning on what he's seeing from young commander safeties, Percy Butler and Derek Forrest.
Well, you know, what you're seeing is you're seeing a guy's grasping what we're doing quickly. It was a really good spring for our secondary, and they picked up right where they left off, and I'm very pleased with that.
So things appear to be going well for Percy Butler and Derek Forrest, but the Commanders player who seems to be having the best training camp so far is corner Kendall Fuller. Fuller has really been standing out. Ron Rivera on Monday morning on Fuller.
Well, first of all, he's got a very good athletic football skill set, and that's a really good thing. Now you couple that with really being a smart football player, a very headsy guy that's got a tremendous amount of anticipation, and he's got a chance to make plays. He really does, and he's having a really good camp right now.
Yes, he is. Kendall Fuller ended up having a good 2021 season. He, like a lot of Washington defensive players, did not get off to a great start in the 2021 season, but Fuller for the 2021 regular season played in 16 of Washington's 17 games and registered an overall grade for Pro Football Focus of 81.5. That's good. PFF grades are on a scale of 0 to 100. The commander secondary is talented. Talent is not the issue for the pass defense. Corners Kendall Fuller and William Jackson III, safeties Cameron Curl and Bobby McCain. These guys all have shown that they can play well. Speaking of Cameron Curl, he did a post-practice press conference on Monday morning. Here he was on why the commander secondary is having a good training camp so far.
Just flying around, being where the ball is, that's like what we want to do. We want to create turnovers for the offense. So just being out here and be able to fly around and be comfortable with the defense like that gives us that, extra gear, to play faster.
Yeah, and while we're talking Commanders defense, guess who was out there serving as a coach for the Commanders on Monday morning? Ryan Kerrigan. Yeah, the recently retired Ryan Kerrigan. He, during his retirement press conference this past Saturday morning, said that he was interested in getting into coaching. Well, Ron Rivera now is giving Kerrigan a taste of NFL coaching. Here was Ron on Monday morning.
Well, what we've done, and Ryan came and specifically talked about wanting to see if coaching is something that's possibly in his future. And so he said, hey, look, let's put together a little bit of an idea, give you a couple weeks to kind of go through it, see what the grind is all about. See if it works for you. I told him one of the things that I did when I first retired. It took me about a year and a half before I decided I really wanted to get into coaching. And so, this is something that you jump straight from retirement into coaching. So he wanted to get a feel for it. We're going to give him, a couple of weeks, and then we'll reassess and reevaluate and see where he is.
All right. So does Ryan Kerrigan have an official title with the Commanders?
Not necessarily, not right now. I mean, this is still kind of the learning and understanding, but he is working specifically with the defensive line, specifically with the defensive ends. You see him put his arm around a couple of the young guys, talk with Montez about a couple of things. So it's good to see him interacting, and we'll see how he is in a couple of weeks.
Well, cool to see Ron Rivera giving Ryan Kerrigan this opportunity right away. Plenty of great NFL players have become successful coaches. Arguably the best receiver in Redskins history, Charlie Taylor, was the Skins receivers coach from 1981 through 1993. So he was the Skins receivers coach for the entirety of the glory days during Joe Gibbs' first stint as Skins head coach. Charlie Taylor, in fact, worked for the Skins from 1964 through 1993 as a player scout and receivers coach. He was a part of all five Redskins teams that made Super Bowls. Charlie Taylor was a receiver on the 1972 NFC champion Redskins and was the receivers coach for the 1982, 83, 87, and 91 NFC champion Skins. So yeah, I mean, just because you were a really good player doesn't mean that you can't also be a really good coach. And maybe that ends up happening with Ryan Kerrigan. Well, it's funny how baseball can work. We, on Monday night at Nationals Park, had reason for why the Nats should not trade star right fielder Juan Soto, and we had reason for why the Nats should trade Juan Soto. Tuesday is the day on which we will find out whether the Nats are trading Soto this season. The 2022 MLB trade deadline is on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. A number of trades already have happened, including a trade by the Nats. But Juan Soto, as of the taping of this installment of the Al Galdi podcast early Tuesday morning, remains on the Nats. The Nats on Monday night lost to the National League East leading New York Mets at Nationals Park 7-3 in game one of a three-game series. Soto had a big game. He has the Nats starting right fielder and number three batter, went 1-for-1 with a solo homer and three walks. Andy had a stolen base. Andy had an outfield assist. Not bad. Soto in the Nats' one-run first drew a two-out six-pitch walk. Soto in the Mets' three-run second threw out Tomas Nito at home plate for the third out on a Starling Marte two-out bases loaded opposite field RBI single to right field for a 3-1 Mets lead. Soto fired a bullet to catcher K-Bit Ruiz. Soto in the Nats' two-run fourth smashed a leadoff homer to dead center field off ex-Nat Max Scherzer to cut the Nats' deficit to 4-2. The homer was a moonshot when it projected 421 feet per Statcast. Soto in the bottom of the fifth drew a two-out seven-pitch walk. Soto in the bottom of the eighth drew a leadoff six-pitch walk and had a stolen base. Juan Soto on Monday night played like a superstar, played like a player worthy of hundreds of millions of dollars. And if this was his final game as a Nat, what a game it was. But at the same time, the Nats lost the game. 7-3 was the final. The game wasn't close. As I have said, one player in baseball, even a great player, can only mean so much. The Nats now in the 2022 regular season are a major league worst 35-69 with a major league worst run differential of minus 172. As good as Soto is, he can only do so much. And so you could use Monday night as reason for the Nats not to trade Juan Soto, and you could use Monday night as reason for the Nats to trade Juan Soto. Will the Nats trade Juan Soto? Who knows? MLB insider John Heyman of the New York Post on Monday night reported the following, quote, "Folks around the Nats whisper that their 23-year-old Juan Soto remains likely to be moved by 6 p.m. on Tuesday, whereupon history can begin judging whether the Nats got enough for a player who projects to become an all-time great and is under control for three more playoff runs through 2024. That the Nats feel the need to move Soto is a real downer for a team that won the World Series only 3 years ago. The better news is that three serious contending teams, the Padres, Dodgers, and Cardinals, all with stockpiles of young talented players, are in the bidding. All three are in. It should be an exciting 24 hours, one Nats-connected person said Monday." End quote. So yeah, I mean, there is very much a chance that Juan Soto has played his final game as a Nat. We shall see. We certainly expect a number of other Nats to be traded on Tuesday. First baseman Josh Bell, DH Nelson Cruz, relievers Kyle Finnegan, Carl Edwards Jr., and Steve Cishek, and others all could be gone by Tuesday's MLB trade deadline. Bell and Cruz are slam dunks to be gone, although I suppose that it's possible that no other team will want Cruz. Josh Bell on Monday night as the Nats starting first baseman at number four batter, 1-for-4 with a double. Bell in the Nats one run first, a two out double down the right field line. Juan Soto on the play scored for a 1-0 Nats lead. Now Bell for the play did not get an RBI. Soto scored via a throwing error by Mets right fielder Starling Marte, but still, that was a nice hit by Bell. Nelson Cruz on Monday night was the Nats starting DH and number six batter. He was demoted beyond the number five spot. Interesting that Nats manager Davey Martinez did that in what very well may have been Cruz's final game as a Nat. Cruz on Monday night, 1-for-4 with a single. He, in a Nats two-run fourth, had a one-out first pitch opposite field single through the right side of the infield. The Nats for the game scored just three runs, totaled just six hits and three walks, went just 1-for-5 with runners in scoring position. Luis Garcia did have two hits. He is an ad starting shortstop and number seven batter, went 2-for-4 with an RBI single, another single, and two strikeouts. Garcia in the Nats two-run fourth, a one-out first pitch, opposite field RBI single to left field to cut the Nats deficit to 4-3, and Garcia in the bottom of the sixth had a two-out single to right field. I mentioned earlier the Mets starting pitcher was, yes, the ex-Nat Max Scherzer. Max on Monday night 3 runs, 2 earned in 6 and 2/3 innings, 5 strikeouts. He was not dominant, but he was a lot better than the Nats starting pitcher on Monday night, Patrick Corbin. Yes, our old pal Corby was on the mound pitching on Monday night, and he got ripped again. Patrick Corbin struggled for a 5th consecutive start. Corbin on Monday night, 4 runs in 4 and 2/3 innings. He gave up 7 hits, a homer, and 6 singles. He issued a walk and a hit by pitch. He recorded 4 strikeouts. He over his 4 and 2/3 innings through 90 pitches. Corbin in the top of the 2nd allowed 3 runs on 5 singles and a walk. You talk about death by a 1,000 paper cuts. A 3-run 2nd in which you give up 5 singles and a walk. And among the many singles in that inning was a 2-out infield single by Brandon Nimmo on a 1-2 pitch as he hit a tapper between Corbin and catcher K-Bear Ruiz. And Corbin, and not Ruiz for some reason, fielded the ball, and the Nats' fielding of the play developed too slowly, resulting in Nimmo being ruled safe at first upon replay review. This was not a good defensive moment for the Nats, who have had way too many bad defensive moments this season. Corbin, in the top of the 3rd, gave up a homer, a 1-out first pitch solo homer by Pete Alonso to left field on a line drive home run for a 4-1 Mets lead. The homer had an exit velocity of 110.9 miles per hour for StatCast. Patrick Corbin now, in this 2022 regular season, over 22 starts, has a major league worst ERA of 6.57 and a major league worst whip of 1.77. Yes, he ranks dead last among all qualified pitchers in the majors in ERA and whip. And if you look at the rankings, it's not even close. Like, Corbin is dead last, and then the next worst guy is actually quite a bit better than Corbin is. You really cannot overstate how bad of a season that Corbin is having. Ain't no way that the Nats should use the Juan Soto trade chip as a means of getting rid of Corbin. If the Nats are going to trade Soto, get back a truckload of stud prospects. Don't lessen Soto's trade value by attaching Corbin to Soto in a trade package, please. The Nats bullpen on Monday night was spotty. 5 Nats relievers combined to allow 3 runs in 4 2/3 innings. Andres Machado was charged with a run in 1 1/3 innings. Steve Cishek, who had been pitching well and potentially had emerged as a trade chip, he was really bad on Monday night. He got charged with 2 runs and recorded just 1 out. Cishek, in a Mets 3-run 6th, issued a 2-out hit-by-pitch of Starling Marte, then gave up a 2-out 3-run opposite-field home run to Francisco Lindor to left center field for a 7-3 Mets lead. And then Cishek issued a walk, a 2-out 5-pitch walk of Pete Alonso. Cishek, when he's on, can be good, but when he's off, he is really off, and he was really off on Monday night. Erasmo Ramirez tossed a scoreless top of the 7th. Victor Arano tossed a scoreless top of the 8th. Hunter Harvey tossed a perfect top of the 9th. And so now we await what goes down on Tuesday, what is a big day for the Nats. The Nats on Monday did make a trade. The Nats on Monday morning traded their super utility man, A-Ray Adrianza, to the Atlanta Braves for outfielder Trey Harris. Harris was the Braves' number 29 prospect per MLB Pipeline. The Braves took him in the 32nd round of the 2018 MLB Draft out of the University of Missouri. This season is Harris's age 26 season. Harris was actually the winner of the Atlanta Braves 2019 Hank Aaron Award, which is presented annually to the top offensive player in the Atlanta Braves minor league system. But Harris this season had an OPS of just 661 for the AA Mississippi Braves. Trey Harris certainly is not some blue chip prospect, but whatever, he's something, and something is better than nothing, especially when you're talking about trading a guy in A-Ray Adrianza, who is a pending free agent and is an older player, and from a Nats perspective, was a road to nowhere. The Nats signed Adrianza as a free agent this past March. This season is his age 32 season. Adrianza did not make his 2022 Major League regular season debut for the Nats until this past June 8th. He suffered a left quadricep strain in an exhibition game this past March 31st and ended up missing a lot of time. He did spend the 2021 season with the Atlanta Braves. They wanted him back, and now he is back with the Braves, and good for the Nats for turning Adrianza into something, because again, something is better than nothing, especially when you are rebuilding as the Nats are. Now, the Nats on Monday afternoon selected the contract of infielder Ildemaro Vargas from AAA Rochester. Vargas essentially is the Nats' A-Ray Adrianza replacement. And this is instructive. So the Nats signed Vargas as a free agent this past May. This season is Vargas's age 30 season. And that says a lot. Like, this is what the Nats have at AAA right now. A guy in his age 30 season. And a guy who is a journeyman. Vargas has played at the major league level for the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Minnesota Twins and the Chicago Cubs and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, he is versatile. Vargas at the major league level has played a number of positions, second base, third base, shortstop, first base, left field, and right field. But the point here is this is what the Nats have at AAA right now. A guy like Vargas, age 30 season, journeyman. The state of the Nats farm system is such that the likes of Ildemaro Vargas are at AAA Rochester. Game 2 for the Nats against the Mets at Nationals Park is on Tuesday night at 7:05. Corey Abbott will be the Nats starting pitcher. Well, whereas we are still waiting on the biggest trades for the Nationals prior to the 2022 MLB trade deadline on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, the Orioles may well have already made their biggest trade of the season. You know, the O's have been a tricky team to peg with the trade deadline in terms of who exactly they'll end up trading, but for months, the expectation had been that they would trade outfielder, first baseman Trey Mancini, and on Monday afternoon, the O's did just that. The O's on Monday afternoon traded Trey Mancini to the Houston Astros in a three-way trade that also included the Tampa Bay Rays. The O's received two pitchers, Seth Johnson from the Tampa Bay Rays and Chase McDermott from the Houston Astros. Seth Johnson was the Rays' number 6 prospect per MLB Pipeline. Chase McDermott was the Astros' number 12 prospect per MLB Pipeline. And to all of this, I say, bravo, Orioles. Bravo to the birds. The Orioles' trading of Trey Mancini is to be celebrated. And not because it is good for the O's to have rid themselves of Mancini. Trey Mancini is a good guy and a good hitter. His comeback from missing all of the 2020 season due to having stage 3 colon cancer was tremendous. Mancini, this past November, winning the American League Comeback Player of the Year award for the 2021 season, was well-deserved. Mancini, at the time of the trade, had an OPS plus for the 2022 regular season of 114. 100 is league average. 114 is good. Mancini had been a key offensive player for an Orioles team that was a stunning 51-51 and 3 games behind the Rays for the American League's third wild card spot. But that's the thing. The O's are doing well. Their rebuild is working. And the rebuild is a function of an approach. An all-in on analytics total teardown approach installed by Executive Vice President and General Manager Mike Elias. Contrary to what some have said, the Orioles' surprising success in the 2022 season was never reason not to trade Trey Mancini. The success was reason to stay the course, stick to the process, and in fact, double down on the process, because the process is working. And the process clearly suggested trading a player in Trey Mancini, for whom the 2022 season is his age 30 season and final season of team control. Now, he's on a one-year contract with a mutual option for the 2023 season, but you get the idea. To say nothing, by the way, of Mancini being limited defensively. As sad as it is to see Trey Mancini go, every O's fan listening to this right now should feel even better about the state of the team with this trade. This trade was reflective of a conviction, of an adherence to a process that is working. You know, Mancini netted two decent pitching prospects from two very well-run organizations in the Rays and Astros. The trade is further proof of Mike Elias being what you need him to be, and that is a cold-blooded killer as a GM. That's what you want in your GM, a cold-blooded killer. Here was Mike Elias on late Monday afternoon in a virtual press conference on the trade of Trey Mancini.
This is certainly a very weighty trade for us, given everything that has transpired the last few years, everything that Trey has meant to this organization since having been drafted, and what is happening with our organization, both in the major and minor leagues right now. There are a lot of considerations that go into making trades, especially this time of year. I can't describe to you the deliberation that has gone into this team's approach to the trade deadline in general, but also this trade in particular. And I think that the bottom line is this is an organization for which we feel a championship window is opening. And we have an opportunity to seek players at this point in time that may contribute to that window and the pursuit of multiple playoff appearances over the next several years here in Baltimore. And part of the reason our division is so difficult is the teams that are in our division have done such a spectacular job over the last decade of balancing present, future, near-term, long-term considerations with their moves. And it's important for us to do the same thing. I think that when a player is a free agent in 9 weeks, you have to consider opportunities to bring in high upside talent that has the potential to contribute many years down the road. And that's what we see in these two pitchers, Seth Johnson in particular from the Rays. We view, and the industry is viewed at times as a top 100 talent, and unfortunately is undergoing an injury right now, but I think that's what has made him available. And Chase McDermott is performing very well as a fourth round pick from the Astros in high A. He's in a bit of a hitter's environment there in Asheville, but his strikeout numbers, his innings totals, and his stuff point to a lot of future success. So I think we bolstered our pitching depth as an organization.
Yeah, well said by Mike Elias. Mike can be a little long-winded, okay? He can go on and on, but he made a number of good points. Mike Elias is a smart guy. He knows what he's doing, and what he's doing is working. Not trading Trey Mancini would have been foolish. And remember, the O's can always re-sign Mancini this coming offseason as a free agent, assuming that'll be a free agent. Again, he's playing this season under a one-year contract with a mutual option for the 2023 season, but mutual options almost always result in the player becoming a free agent. By the way, did you see the troll tweet by ESPN MLB insider Buster Olney shortly after the Trey Mancini trade? Buster has a thing against the O's. It's very odd, but very obvious. Buster has become to the O's what Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio has become to the Commanders. Buster has constantly trashed the O's, especially for having a low payroll, even though that's part of the rebuild. That's part of the process, Buster, a process that is working. Well, Buster on Monday afternoon tweeted the following off the trade of Trey Mancini. Quote, "Trey Mancini was the Orioles' highest paid player. They save about $2.5 million by dealing him now for a couple of A-ball pitching prospects." End quote. Okay, that was Buster Olney's tweet, and that is the exact voice in which he tweeted that tweet. But what a troll tweet by Buster Olney. Like, what is his problem with the O's? I just don't get that. Buster's smarter than this. Like, why is he constantly poking at the O's for the low payroll when, again, the low payroll is part of the process? If the O's get good and then still aren't spending money, then you can trash them. But we're not at that point just yet. Anyway, the O's on Monday night did play a game, and the O's won in dominant fashion, a 7-2 win at the Texas Rangers in game one of a three-game series, as the O's, despite trading Trey Mancini, Joe Angel, were back in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column. The O's for this 2022 regular season now, 52-51, including 38-27 since a 14-24 start. And the O's now are a mere 2.5 games behind both the Tampa Bay Rays and Seattle Mariners for the American League's second and third wild card spots. One more time, the process is working. Big games on Monday night for three Orioles in particular: Adley Rutschman, Cedric Mullins, and Ryan Mountcastle. Adley Rutschman on Monday night as the Orioles starting catcher and number two batter, 3-for-4 with an RBI double, another double, a single, and a walk. Rutschman in the top of the first had a single to center field. Rutschman in the Orioles' three-run second drew a one-out five-pitch walk. Rutschman in the Orioles' two-run fourth had an opposite field RBI double to the left center field gap for a 5-0 Orioles lead. Rutschman in the top of the sixth had a leadoff double to right field on an 0-2 pitch. Adley Rutschman now in his major league career, and it is a career that, of course, started this season, 56 regular season major league games, 20 doubles. He has been a doubles machine lately. Cedric Mullins on Monday night. He is the Orioles starting center fielder and number one batter, 2-for-4 with a solo homer, an RBI single, and a walk. Mullins in the Orioles' one-run first, a leadoff opposite field home run near the left field foul pole for a 1-0 Orioles lead. Now, this homer was what you call a Globe Life Field homer. That is the Texas Rangers home ballpark, Globe Life Field. The homer went just a projected 336 feet per Statcast. That was it, 336. But still, a homer is a homer. Mullins in the Orioles' three-run second had a one-out RBI single up the middle for a 2-0 Orioles lead. And Mullins in the Orioles' two-run fourth drew a leadoff six-pitch walk despite having been down in the count at 1.12. And Ryan Mountcastle, who has been struggling lately, he had a good game on Monday night. Mountcastle as the Orioles starting first baseman at number four batter, 2-for-5 with an RBI double and an RBI single. Mountcastle in the Orioles three-run second, a one-out RBI single through the left side of the infield on a 1-2 pitch for a 4-0 Orioles lead. And Mountcastle in the Orioles two-run fourth, a one-out RBI double off the left field wall for a 6-0 Orioles lead despite having been down to the count of 1.12. Good start on Monday night for Spencer Watkins. Watkins in this 7-2 win at the Rangers on Monday night. One run in six innings, five strikeouts versus no walks. He gave up five hits, a homer, and four singles. 88 pitches, 55 strikes versus 33 balls. Spencer Watkins has been pretty good for the O's this season. 14 major league starts in the 2022 regular season, ERA of 3.80. And the O's on Monday night only used one reliever, Keegan Aiken. One run in three innings with three strikeouts. So a nice job by him. Now, with Trey Mancini now gone, the O's have replaced him on the major league roster with Yusniel Diaz. The O's on Monday afternoon recalled outfielder Yusniel Diaz from AAA Norfolk. This is notable because Diaz was one of the five players who the O's acquired from the Los Angeles Dodgers for third baseman slash shortstop Manny Machado in July 2018. Now, the Manny Machado trade really has not netted much for the O's. So the O's did get pitcher Dean Kramer in the Machado trade, but not much else has come from that trade. We'll see what happens here with Yusniel Diaz, but this season already is Diaz's age 25 season, and it's not like he's been killing it for Norfolk this season. Yusniel Diaz, 145 plate appearances for Norfolk this season, OPS of just 677. Game two for the O's at the Rangers is on Tuesday night at 8:05. Jordan Lyles scheduled to be the Orioles starting pitcher, but he would appear to be a candidate to be traded on Tuesday. So we shall see. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Wednesday show, episode 368, will feature a lot on the Commanders off Tuesday's padded practice, what will be the team's first padded practice of 2022 training camp. Also on the show, a lot on the Nationals and Orioles with the MLB trade deadline on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. What more is coming from the Nats and O's? Tuesday could be a monumental day, especially for the Nats in their rebuild. Also, we have games for the Nats and O's on Tuesday night. The Nats on Tuesday night at 7:05 have game two of their three-game series against the National League East leading New York Mets at Nationals Park. Who knows what the Nats lineup will look like? The O's on Tuesday night at 8:05 have game two of their three-game series at the Texas Rangers. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
I'm not going to do what you all think I'm going to do, which is just flip out!